I think that's where my second crazy good turn came, is I thought, gosh, I'm a problem solver. I've lived this problem. There has to be a solution. Where and how can I figure out who else is thinking about this, working on this, and trying to solve it?
Welcome to Crazy Good Turns. I'm your host, Frank Blake, and we have an important and I think really interesting session today. Our guests are Lindsay Beck and Katarina Schwab, and they're working to develop a completely different way for nonprofits to get funding and for people interested in addressing problems to provide that money to the charitable organizations. Lindsay and Katarina are the founders of a company called NPX Advisors, and as you'll hear, they are challenging all of us to think bigger, better, crazier. They're terrifically interesting people taking on a huge issue. Over the last few years of doing this podcast, one of the things that's obvious to me is that the biggest frustration people usually have who are engaged in helping others, biggest frustration is fundraising. The illogic, the inefficiency, and sometimes just the plain stupidity of it. Our two guests are focused on fixing that. So without further ado, welcome Lindsay and Katarina.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on the podcast. You both have amazing backgrounds and great accomplishments before you started NPX, but let me start with this question. Would each of you describe just a bit what got you into the helping out others business to begin with?
This is Katarina. I've had a lot of turns since and none was really predicted too far out. My for-profit really started my career squarely in for-profit, in investment banking, venture capital, in both in Europe and in the States, and then working for one of our portfolio companies, and then actually having some success in some of those investments. And so having my own capital to start my own business, and actually had a retail business for 5 years, and then got to the nonprofit. And I would say that it was a bit random in that I wasn't necessarily thinking my next step is going to work for a nonprofit, but I had been involved with Build On for a really long time and it had really been a family affair. So Build On is empowering youth through service. Here it's through after-school service programs in inner-city high schools, and overseas it's building schools in developing countries. They said to me, you know, we're looking for someone to run our development on the West Coast. You've been there for a long time. Can you help us find someone? And as someone said to me, I ended up hiring myself, because next thing I knew, I was in the office with a computer and got really, really into it. And so for the next 5 years, I headed up that effort based out of San Francisco and loved it, brought my kids. And so I now have a 12 and 11-year-old who have been inside most high schools in the Bay Area with me. I found that was a great icebreaker. These high school kids would talk to me if I had a 2- or 4-year-old with me. Done multiple service projects throughout the Bay Area, and then built schools in Nicaragua, Malawi, and Nepal, none of which was directly related to my job. My job was to raise capital and raise awareness, but I felt it was really important to literally get into the trenches to know the power of our work.
That's great. And Lindsay?
I guess my first crazy good turn was being diagnosed with cancer, which sounds ironic because you wouldn't think that's a crazy good turn. But shortly out of college, I was a young adult diagnosed with cancer the day after running a marathon. Thought it was the healthiest I had ever been. To my great surprise, I was actually the sickest. And in going through my treatments, I lived a problem. I lived a profound void in the treatment of young adults with cancer, and that was sterilization. So at the time, cancer patients were being sterilized without their knowledge and permission by cancer treatment. So chemotherapy and radiation and sometimes surgery can often be sterilizing, and patients weren't being told that in advance of treatment. And that seemed crazy to me as a young 22-year-old facing my own mortality and my own treatment plans. And so I personally uncovered this risk and was able to freeze my eggs in advance of treatment, preserve my fertility, and then go through treatments knowing that if I survived, I would be able to live the life of my dreams and become a mother. And in doing that and experiencing that void, I realized this was a solvable problem for other people and that someone needed to solve it. And so I started a nonprofit organization with that goal of solving this problem and putting the organization out of business in 10 years or less. So I started a nonprofit called Fertile Hope, and our goal was to do two things. One, make sure every patient was informed of their risks, and two, increase access to treatment so that patients could preserve their fertility before undergoing these potentially sterilizing treatments. And I'm thrilled to say that over time, we were able to achieve those goals. So one, it is now the standard of care in the U.S. to inform your patients, which means that if you don't inform them, you're at risk of malpractice. We were able to rewrite the medical standard of care there. And then two, we were able to transform insurance coverage around the country so that millions of people have coverage for fertility preservation when they're facing sterilizing medical treatments. And I should add, I now have 4 children, so my own personal dreams came true. I often forget to say that, and people leave feeling sorry for me. But in doing that, sort of in that case, I lived the problem, I lived the solution, and I wanted to bring that solution to others. And in fact, I felt guilty not doing so. I felt like, gosh, this is solvable, and I know the solution. Why doesn't everyone know this and have access to it? And then in doing that and running a small, high-impact nonprofit, I lived another problem, and that was the fundraising problem. You know, I lived on that annual fundraising treadmill where often there's an inverse relationship between money and impact, where the more successful we became, the harder it was to raise money. And our donors would say, gosh, you guys are doing so well. You don't need our money. We will give it to a nonprofit that needs it more. And that seemed counterintuitive to me and was not how the for-profit world works. And so I think that's where my second crazy good turn came, is I thought, gosh, I'm a problem solver. I've lived this problem. There has to be a solution. Where and how can I figure out who else is thinking about this, working on this, and trying to solve it? And so I decided to go to business school. I went to Wharton to study finance, to really step back and learn and listen and understand the market and where things were. And that's what led me to begin thinking about NPX and where the initial ideas around the impact security were born, was in business school. And that led to my third crazy good turn, which was meeting Katarina and taking that academic journey I had been on and turning it into an entrepreneurial journey and starting the company and bringing this to the world.
Those are both amazing arcs of stories. Imagine someone's making a movie about NPX and they want the opening scene to focus on the pivotal moment, maybe when you came up with the idea for it or when you decided to pursue it all in or knew it would work. What's that scene? What's the pivotal moment in your story so far?
There have been a lot of pivotal moments along the way. The pivotal moment for me was meeting Lindsay for the first time, and she had already been hard at work on what has turned into so much more at NPX. But after Build On, where I was the head of development for 5 years on the West Coast, I was really focused on trying to find a better way for nonprofits to raise capital and for that to be based on their impact, not on their ability to throw a fabulous gala every year or beg, borrow, and plead for capital every single day, but to really be able to raise capital based on impact. And I think I was just talking about it to anyone and everyone, and a mutual friend of ours said, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I wish I had a solution for you, but one of my great friends is running around talking about the same problem, and so I think you should meet. And so we had a lunch where this mutual friend invited us both over and someone else, and myself and the other person told our stories, and then Lindsay told us what she was working on, and it was just that moment for me. It was, someone describes it as when the flame is lit. It felt like that. It was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. This is what I've been looking for.
Very cool. Lindsay, pretty much the same answer?
Absolutely. And then I sort of flashed to other scenes where the flame continued to grow, whether it was in a conversation with the executive director of a nonprofit who put up her hands and cheered and said, "Wow, you have reinvented fundraising for nonprofits." Or when we meet with donors and empathize with the tough position they're in, trying to give away their money in a meaningful way that has a real impact, and they get tears in their eyes when they see the merit of a new way that helps more people and lets them feel good about what they're doing.
Maybe this is a good time for you to describe how NPX works, because I think it really is brilliant and creative.
Great, yes. So as you said in the beginning, our vision, NPX's vision, is to transform how nonprofits are funded. And to do that, we developed a new financial product called the Impact Security, which brings together donors and investors to fund nonprofits in a new way. And so our first deal, our first Impact Security deal, was launched last May. And it was with a group of 16 donors led by Richard Branson's Virgin Unite, the San Francisco Foundation, Giving Pledge members Gordon and Luli Gund, and a number of other individuals and foundations, and 11 investors led by Omidyar Network, Duncan Niederauer, the former CEO of the New York Stock Exchange. That first Impact Security with those donors and investors was to fund The Last Mile, which is teaching coding inside prisons.
And yeah, we actually featured that on a podcast. Back last year, yeah.
Yes, which was totally random, Frank. We met Frank through someone else, and then as I was looking at the Crazy Good Turns various episodes, of which I've gotten through quite a few, and I'm definitely going to listen to all of them because they've each been amazing. I saw The Last Mile there, so very serendipitous. So they've been running this program to teach coding inside U.S. prisons for a number of years. This particular financing was to fund the first ever web development shop inside a prison. Lindsay and I have spent a lot of time in San Quentin as we were getting to know this program so that we could really understand. We always ask a nonprofit three questions. We say, what impact are you trying to achieve? How much capital do you need? And over how much time? And this is very different than what nonprofits are being asked today. And in fact, this nonprofit was about to plan a gala and was really quite hesitant to do so. They were seeing the impact, and so they were really drawn to our model. And as you can imagine, since they haven't been asked the questions of how much money do you need and over how much time, we're really moving beyond the one-year cycle. They turned to us and said, how much is available? And we said, no, this is really your opportunity to build a use of proceeds that will allow you to shoot for the moon and to achieve the impact that you're trying to achieve. So the Impact Security allows for that.
And describe how that project worked and how the Impact Security, how that gets funded and then dispersed.
Sure, happy to explain how it works. So the funding vehicle is called the Impact Security. And as Katarina said, it brings together donors and investors to fund nonprofits based on their impact. And to clarify, we use the term donor and investor very intentionally. So when we say donor, we mean someone who wants to make a donation. And when we say investor, we mean someone who wants to earn a financial return. And it's really important to clarify that because a lot of nonprofits now call their donors investors, and it makes things very confusing. But so with the Impact Security, it allows a nonprofit to issue performance-based debt and then repay that debt over time with donations. And so what happens is a group of donors contributes to what's called a donor impact fund, and a separate group of investors buy this debt from the nonprofit. So on day one, the nonprofit issues debt and receives money from investors. So they have all the money they need up front to run the program over a long time frame. And then over time, the nonprofit achieves and reports out on the impact, the certain predetermined impact goals, and as they achieve units of impact, that triggers the donor impact fund to repay the investors, to make their donation and repay investors. So if an organization achieves all of its impact over time, the donors buy those units of impact, and that is used to repay investors. And if an organization falls short of its impact targets, investors may lose some or all of their investment. And the donors are able to redeploy or recycle the remaining donations to other nonprofits of their choosing. And so in doing that, the simple structure in terms of bringing these different groups together has a really unique value proposition for each participant. So nonprofits have access to new sources of capital. They're able to raise more money over longer timelines at a lower cost of capital and really focus on impact. Investors then have more opportunities to invest in impact, and it's a product that explicitly links their financial returns with impact. And then lastly, donors get to move from the traditional model of diligence, donate, and hope to explicitly linking their donations with impact. The more impact that happens, the more they donate, and vice versa. And all of that allows us to have a more efficient and transparent market with accountability and transparency around what's working, what's not, and learning and growing from there.
So your focus and your ability through this to focus on impact sounds so powerful and so straightforward, but I suspect it's not as straightforward as it sounds, or not as easy as it sounds, is it?
You know, in terms of impact, it really used to be the red herring. People would say, how do you measure impact? Who decides what the right impact is, the right level of impact? And so we've come a long way, both as NPX with our ability to structure impact security deals and also the sector. There's many more impact evaluators, auditors, people really, from university groups, so people are really thinking deeply about this. Even an organization that we partner with called Impact Genome Project. We won't say it's easy because there is a lot of time that we spend with the nonprofits to really figure out what impact they are trying to achieve. And there is always a spectrum. The Last Mile is a good example. So their impact spectrum is from impact outputs, or the number of incarcerated individuals who now know how to code and go through their program, all the way to recidivism, or people not reoffending and going back to prison. Where we settled for this first impact security, and I say first impact security because we do believe there'll be more, and that impact metric could be different as they move along this spectrum and as they grow. Where we settled was hours worked in the dev shop, because it's going to sound really simple now, but after a lot of work, we realized that that would really show prove success, because you can only hit hours worked if you've trained enough individuals to know how to code at that level and secure the job contracts to hit those hours. That was the impact metric for the first deal. The group of donors and investors all signed off on it, and we actually just reported really positive results. It's a year after, and so investors actually just last week got repaid on this deal, which is super exciting.
But oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yes, but thank you.
That's very cool.
They still have 0% recidivism. People are actually not only learning how to code in prison, they are getting paid the highest wage, which is then represents cost savings to the prison system, increased personal savings for them for when they do get out. Most inmates, when they get out, have $200. When you're getting paid $17 versus the next best paying job of just under a dollar, you have a lot more money when you get out, which obviously helps your abilities to not reoffend. And they're getting jobs, and they're getting jobs that are getting paid, six-figure salaries at some of the great tech companies. And so there are still eyes on the recidivism impact metric. At the time when we structured the deal, we didn't feel like they controlled that metric as much as they needed to, but they are getting there. So it's a lot of work, but there's been a lot of progress.
I would add that when we are in the boardroom or a theoretical discussion around impact, it does seem big and messy and insurmountable. But when we are in a room with the nonprofits, we've never met a nonprofit that doesn't know what they're currently measuring, what they wish they could be measuring, what their peers are measuring, and they aren't unclear on their goal at hand and what they want to solve or what they want to move the needle on. And so when we get out of the theoretical and into the practical, it makes it easier and very clear for us and for them.
So is that learning about focus more something that applies to the donor / investors than to the charitable organization itself?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's more getting the donor and investors to understand and focus on, well, what do you expect on an impact from your investment or donation?
And alignment, right? So the last mile's impact security had 27 participants. And in a traditional fundraising model, that would have meant 27 different reports on 27 different timelines on likely 27 different metrics, all of which the donors wanted a report on. As opposed to, in our case, it's one report once a year on the core impact metric that the nonprofit cares most about. And that is transformative for the nonprofit.
And as we built that business case and settled on or determined the impact metric and went to those 27 participants, not one had any issue with it. They all agreed that that was the right impact metric. So as much as one might think the donors and investors want to be at the table figuring that out, if you've gone through the process, they approve and they are thrilled now to all get this report with one impact metric. And yes, some more details on what's happened over the last year, but they're all looking at one metric and money moves based on that metric.
One of the quotes attributed to you or that I've read that I really think seems profound is the way you fund impact determines what impact is possible. Could you go in a little deeper into that? Because that seems to be right at the heart of what you're doing.
Absolutely. I think that donors don't realize often the power seat that they're in and that the way you fund impact really determines what impact is possible. And by that, we mean if you fund small amounts over short timelines, by default, the nonprofit is hamstrung and can't get as much done. The way we fund nonprofits is not the way we fund for-profits. And I think that comes down to this broken model of a donor only has one option, varying levels of due diligence, donate, and then hope for impact. And because you can't control the back end, the impact part, you try to control what you can. So you try to do more diligence, or you try to move the other levers you have, which is amount of money and timelines for money. And what it means is that it's hard to let go and trust and give huge amounts over long timelines when you're just hoping for the impact on the back end. And so instead, we end up really limiting what the nonprofits are capable of because they're on this annual fundraising treadmill where they're getting small amounts of money over one-year timelines trying to get things done, and it just simply isn't working.
I think that's such an important point. We had Dan Pallotta on the podcast a while back, and you know his comments on why nonprofits haven't gained scale. But this seems like a potential answer to that.
We've spoken to him over the years, just reconnected with him a few weeks ago, and he was thrilled to hear of the progress. You know, the hardest part of all this has actually been change of behavior for donors. People are surprised when you have, we've had also people say like, wow, this is an incredibly elegant solution. So you think, great, we have an elegant solution. We've done the work. We've talked to the three different parties of nonprofits, donors, investors. They all want this. And then you think, wait, why has this taken longer than we thought to get it done? And for the nonprofits, the pain point is so high. They are thrilled to have this new development tool in their toolbox. For investors, it's the shiny new toy. It's an impact investing product that explicitly links your capital with impact. And for donors, they are in the sweetest seat of, as Lindsay was just walking through, instead of hoping, now your money only moves when impact happens, but your pledge to donate catalyzes this new investment capital and sets the nonprofit up for success. But it is a change of behavior.
One of the phrases that always sticks in my mind is that the end result shows the dominant motive. And I wonder sometimes with the way we approach nonprofits, whether there isn't some part of us that wants the glitzy fundraiser or wants to be powerful on boards doling out money timorously rather than with a eye to long-term impact. But maybe that's too cynical a way of looking at this.
We think we really have a solution here. And so you can be a little bit blinded. We've been in meetings where we're talking about impact and we walk out and think, I think that person's definition of impact is different than ours. And so we recognize that and realize that those might not be our pioneers, but we also have found so many people that have the same definition. And we've been in rooms with, you know, 10 plus foundations who have told us outright, our biggest grant-making challenge is that we don't know if it's working and we really need it to work. And so we have, over the years and in so many meetings, we have met the people that really are aligned with us and really feel like we're getting a lot of traction right now.
And I also think, Frank, to your point around a lot of philanthropy, for better or worse, is tied to ego or hurt, you know, passion, in addition to tax benefits. And it's messy, right? It's a mix of finance and emotion. And I think it's easy to say it's all one or all the other when really it's okay that it's in the middle. And so even with the impact security, we are trying to meet people where they are. And if what's most important to you is your name and lights, you can still do that and link the money to impact. It isn't mutually exclusive, right? Or if
That's a great
you
point.
Really want to be passionate about this area and have it doesn't have to be head or heart. It can be head and heart, and it should be. And so we don't have to remove that piece of it, but we do need to add the impact piece because right now there are hundreds of millions of dollars being deployed into the sector, and it's not linked to data. We don't know what's working and what's not, and we're not learning from that the way the for-profit world does, and that's at the expense of human lives and the environment.
So what's the big project that you're working on now, or projects?
Yes. So out of that listening tour, we learned a lot. We met with over 60 philanthropists, individuals, and foundations, and it sort of boiled down to three things. And the first is that no matter who you are, if you're any one of us all the way up to the largest foundation, you don't have enough money to solve the issues that you care about. Number two, that some of those large foundations do have massive teams working on this, but it's really hard to feel like you have access to a high quality of deals. And setting up that diligence process is really overwhelming to a lot of people. And then lastly, that, you know, as I said in these rooms with the foundations, that money, there's a real frustration that money isn't linked to impact and they don't know if it's working or not. So we took those three things and developed our second product, or that's called a Donor Impact Fund, or a DIF. And we're saying DIF because we found it really helpful to ground people in what else is out there and the alternatives. And so the DIF is really an alternative or even complementary to a DAF, which many people know, the Donor Advised Fund. And there, the Donor Advised Fund is a great financial decision. You get the tax minimization strategy. You put your capital into a DAF. And how we've seen people use DAFs are really more like a charitable checking account, like, oh, that I'm going to need to, for my kid's school or gala or race, writing checks out of it. But it's quite overwhelming to, with the current model of diligence, donate, and hope, to make really big plays out of the DAF. And so the DIF deploys capital through our impact security. So it's different from a DAF in a few ways. A DIF will be focused on an issue area, education, homelessness, criminal justice, economic opportunity, or a geography. It will activate capital within the first 2 years of us structuring deals in the form of impact security deals in the form of pledges. And it will link that capital to impact. It won't, your money won't leave a DIF until impact happens, but your pledge will catalyze investment capital, which does fund the nonprofit on day one. And so this DIF model has really resonated with people. I think, one, we listened, and then we're going back to these people to say, this is the product we're talking about, and we have had 100% yes to let's keep going and see what this really looks like.
Okay, so let me end this with a question that ties back to the beginning. If you're now 5 years forward and filming the scene at the end of the movie, that shows your grand accomplishment or symbolic accomplishment or what NPX has accomplished over the last 5 years, what's in that scene?
Again, so many images. I see a huge celebration. I see all the beneficiaries of, you know, if you think of one diff for economic opportunity in Atlanta, say it's $100 million. That's 10 nonprofits who reach 500, 1,000, you know, the multiplier effect can be huge. It is really our why. It is really why we're doing this. We want nonprofits to have the money they need to achieve the impact that the world needs to see across so many issues. We're kind of honing in right now on economic opportunity and mobility because it covers so many other issues. But this really, we are in a time of crisis and we really need a new mechanism. And we try not to bore people with the details and of the financial product. And they don't even really need to know that. And they need to each know their role of like this. We need to unlock the capital, the philanthropic capital. This is a better way. We need to give nonprofits a new tool to raise capital. And investors, there's a growing amount of impact investing dollars out there that are looking for the double bottom line. So there is a strong value proposition. There is great desire from all of those parties to achieve more impact. And we can do it together.
And to layer on to that visual of a celebration, I would say surrounding us on all the walls are, imagine almost like a Bloomberg or a stock ticker or whatever visual you have in your brain around that, where billions of dollars are moving and they're moving tied to impact. And so some of those charts are going up and up and up and more money is flowing to them. And we're in the room celebrating with the people who are benefiting from those programs that are working, and other charts are going down and down and down, and those programs aren't working, and we're learning fast and shutting them down so that we can apply resources to the ones that are working. And so that real visual of billions of dollars moving and moving tied to impact so that we can more quickly get to what works and scale it and shut down what's not working.
I just think the idea, the concept you have come up with is so powerful and so important, particularly in this space, and can make such a difference for so many people. I applaud you for all the energy and effort that it takes to keep moving it forward, and congratulations on the success you've gotten so far. For our listeners, where should they go to learn more?
First of all, thank you, Frank. That means a lot to us. So thank you. The best place is npxadvisors.com. We also are on social media. I think our channel of choice is LinkedIn, both for NPX Inc. and our individual Katarina Schwab and Lindsay Beck, where we've found that we can get the most reach, the most thoughtful dialogue with the people who care about what we're trying to do.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again. Thank you for joining us and look forward to your continuing progress. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What a compelling idea and two such fascinating people. Again, you can find out more by going to npxadvisors.com. I hope you check it out. Our show is recorded at Listen Up Studios in Atlanta. Editing by Stephen Key and Score a Score in Los Angeles. Special thanks to our production team of Brian Sabin and Megan Hanlon. Until next time, this is Frank Blake thanking you for listening and for celebrating another crazy good turn.